What is going on? Bar Down Breakdown, episode 185. And today we are joined by our homie Colin from Promise Game, Pop Punk from New Hampshire. Colin, what's going on, dude?
What's going on, Mikey? How you doing, man? Thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Hell yeah, man. And you're listening to the fresh track from Promise Game, Connecticut, just came out yesterday, yeah. Right? Or I'm like losing track of days.
Yeah, it just dropped. It dropped this week. Yeah, we actually did a non-Friday release with this one. Actually, we were trying to test some stuff out, but we dropped this on Wednesday of this week. But yeah, you know, a lot of people kind of saw it on Friday on the release radar and stuff like that. So yeah, it's been out for a couple of days. We're loving it. We're loving the reception we're getting.
Hell yeah! So tell me about that Wednesday release, because you know, sometimes releasing on Friday, like that's what people expect, but it can then sometimes like flood it. Like your release radar can be pretty flooded. So do you feel like having the Wednesday release worked out in your favor, or like, I guess, tell us what you've noticed with that.
Yeah. So we definitely we didn't know what to expect because we've never done it. I know of some bands that have done it in the past. They said they've had good, you know, they've had good results with it. Some said that they didn't. Our main thing was, the release radar, kind of one thing of it being flooded is, you know, universal across the board. But our, you know, kind of looking at like the timing of the year too, we did want to get something out. We wanted to get this out in 2022. And we didn't want to get it too close to the Christmas season, but the way things kind of happened was it just kind of got that way. We were really busy with like preparing for our tour and things like that. So we decided to like push it back a little bit. And then when we started getting more towards like that December date, you know, it was like, oh, are we going to be flooded not only on a Friday with release radar, but is it just going to be a bunch of Christmas songs and like then totally get like pushed off to the side? Because, you know, a lot of times that could happen, especially with, I think, Christmas being like the main one where that you see a lot of cover songs and things like that. So that's kind of where it was at. We had a great first day. Some of the really, like, honestly, the same type of numbers we've seen on Fridays with the release radar and everything like that. And on top of that, it's just been doing really well. Like, even, you know, the last couple of days, we've been kind of watching it. We don't have our statistics really from yesterday yet, just yet, with the New Music Friday, but we saw the numbers and we're happy with it for sure. I think we're going to be able to kind of see what the difference of that Wednesday to Thursday looks like more in like a week or so, just to kind of like, you know, really have a better, like a 7-day kind of overview of, okay, where were the spikes? Where were the peaks? And I think we are going to see really that spike on a Wednesday, which is really cool. And probably will be one of the higher spikes at this point. So I don't know, guys, I think the jury's still out. We've only done it once and it kind of worked, but it's not like it was the most successful thing we've ever done. I think we might try it again with like a Thursday or a Tuesday or something like that down the road. But, you know, I think we're definitely happy with how it's been performed at this point in terms of statistics. But at the end of the day too, like we don't put a ton of, you know, stock into streaming and counts, like stuff like that. The reception we've been getting from people is way more important to us. And I know a lot of bands will say that, but we really do like mean it, to the point of like, we'd much like, it's cool, like the song's doing well, but we, when somebody reaches out to us or a press outlet basically just hears the song with a press release, and then they just write an article about it without any sort of, you know, outreach really, other than just making them aware of it, that speaks louder than to us, I think, collectively, than, you know, streams and stuff like that.
Absolutely. So yeah. I guess give us a little backstory. I know you said you wanted to get Connecticut out kind of before the new year. So like, was that kind of like a one-off track that you recorded, or were there like a few singles that you went to the studio to kind of pound out?
Yeah. So after this song was written basically after our first tour that we ever did as a band. The song is literally about our day in Connecticut that we spent. And so it's something that like we had kind of like workshopped very, you know, early on, at like back in May, June. And it's been in the works, and actually we've been playing it live since, I want to say, we debuted it in our last New Hampshire show in September. So we actually played it live 7 times before it even came out. And that was kind of part of it. I think it was like everyone was just like, every time we played at a show, like someone would be like, that's my new favorite song. And it'd be like, it'd be like, damn it. I wish it was out already. Cause like, it, you know, like that we kind of realized that we were losing a little bit of that steam. And I was like, oh man. Cause we did a little, I think we did a little backwards, which is fine. Like we were just, we don't care. Again, like we're excited to share our music. And when we started wanting to play it live, we had, you know, our last show of the year in New Hampshire, we were playing a headlining set and we had a long set and we were kind of thinking about it, like, do we play it? And we're like, screw it, let's just play it. We all love the song and we know people are going to love it. Who cares if it's not out yet? And, but then we set ourselves up to have to play it until, you know, all the way through our tour and then basically releasing the song 2 weeks after our tour. So, you know, that's kind of where the timing kind of went to it and why we wanted to get it out this year, because so many people have already heard it live. And a lot of people just told us that, like, oh my God, I really like that song. Like, I honestly think that, you know, we always hear that one of our songs, Thanks for the Anxiety, live is really what a lot of people enjoy. Like, we always get that from feedback. But this was like Connecticut ever since we've played it live. Like, everybody that's told us that they really enjoyed a song, it was that one. So I think that had a lot to do with why we wanted to get it out. And again, you know, in our world, that's just like, we're looking to share our music and we want to write music. We want to share it. You know, we do care about, you know, streams and we care about, you know, the strategy and everything like that, which is why we kind of, you know, made sure we have a strong strategy behind doing this release when, you know, maybe you're not really releasing a song at this time of the year, being the type of band we are. I think you definitely see a lot less releases from, you know, the bands that are, you know, in our level in the scene, right around, you know, obviously Christmas, unless it's a cover, right? So, mm-hmm.
So was the song actually recorded before you started playing it live, or were you like playing it live and then we're like, oh crap, we got to record
that thing? Yeah, so we went we actually went into the studio for the first time with a longtime friend of ours. We've always worked with Revelry Studios in Manchester, New Hampshire. Matt Blanchett over there is like one of the best producers in the world. We tell everybody to work with him. But we've never worked with this friend of ours that we've all, you know, a lot of us have actually done recordings with him in the past for many different projects. So it was really cool to kind of get to work with him on this one. And yeah, we went in October, actually the beginning of October. So it had been basically mixed and mastered for almost a month before we shared it. However, we were not mixed and mastered for a month. It was basically a couple of weeks before we went on tour and we didn't want to muddy it. And, you know, basically we were talking about getting closer to, like, you know, Thanksgiving and things like that. So, you know, we kind of workshopped a couple different things and, you know, we were really, do we do this before the end of the year? Do we not? Do we hold it till January? Do we hold it till February? And I think it was just like, you know what, let's get out there. Everyone loves it. Let's just do it. So that's kind of where we were at with it. You know, we were hoping it was actually going to be ready for tour and we just had some changes that we were making. So we wanted to make, and that was kind of the other thing behind this. Even though it's been recorded and mixed and things like that for a while, it's been one of the songs we've put most of our time and effort into to make sure that it's exactly how we wanted it to be, without a doubt.
Now, are there other songs you're sitting on as well?
Yeah. So we've been, and that's kind of, you know, where we're at right now with you know, what we're doing as a band. So, you know, our last show of the year of 2022 was our last show of that tour. We just went on the 13th out in Baltimore. We generally as a band always kind of do a winter shutdown for various different reasons. But the main goal in, you know, between, you know, what we're doing now, basically at the, you know, we started kind of right after our tour, a little bit before the tour, really writing and utilizing the next couple months to set ourselves up with some tracks for the next year, you know, for the coming year. But yeah, we have right now, I think we're sitting on 4 tracks that are just in the works. And we really don't know what we're going to do with everything yet. Like we always try to be very strategic, especially when we're putting together a collection, whether it be an LP or an EP. We haven't done an LP yet. We've done 2 EPs. So we're trying to figure out what we want to do. You know, after doing 2 EPs, you know, thinking about what's going to be kind of the best way to go about it. If it's, you know, we're doing a bunch of singles and then put them all together. So that's all in the works still, but we're writing music like actively like crazy. We just had an awesome writing session a couple of days ago. really just putting together the type of songs that you can kind of hear in Connecticut. That's where we're going. We're kind of taking, I don't know how it happened, but we just became like that first EP we did was very pop punk and we all love that album. And we still play a bunch of songs off it when we play live, but we're kind of shifting more towards a more like rock emo type kind of vibe with pop punk tendencies. Cause that's never going to go away from our band. But that's kind of where we're going with our sound. So Connecticut's kind of like a nice representation of a little bit of the shift that we're kind of going through. And a lot of that too is, you know, this is our first song we recorded with our lead guitar player, Mike. He joined the band like right before we went on tour. I think he played one show before he went on the tour that Connecticut is, you know, inspired on back in May. So this song was the first time we ever recorded with him. It's really the first song we wrote with Mike. And I think, you know, his influences and being a good guitar player and the type of music that he listens to has brought a really nice, fresh kind of feel to this band. And, you know, if you listen to Connecticut compared to like even Any Reason to Party, they're totally two different songs. So that's kind of where this band's moving to, especially with the new music we're writing.
Amen. So I guess let's dive into the history of Promise Game because, you know, just going based on your releases, it seems like you guys started, you know, releasing music in 2020, which is kind of like in the middle of the pandemic. Or so it is.
Yeah.
Promise Game, like a pandemic band, like you guys were all in other bands before, kind of put it on the back burner. And then you're like, why don't we start doing music again? Is that kind of the story?
It is that. It is that. But it's actually not like we were in other bands. So basically, we started this band right before, like, so we say we are established in 2020 because we really are. We started playing like in my basement. Like I had this idea with the original synth player who's no longer in the band, Eric. I was just like, hey, why aren't we like play? Like we were always going to shows and the people in the band, we were going to shows with these guys. And I'm just like, we're all musicians. We've all played in bands like, you know, in our career, like in our lives, we played shows together. I played shows with Adam when I was 15 years old. And I'm 35 now. So like 20 years ago, I was playing music with these guys, never in the same band though. So it's just like one of those things. It was like, and it was actually pre-COVID. It was like a month or a month and a half before. We had like maybe two practices, right? And we were just doing pop punk covers. We were doing 90s songs, kind of obscure 90s songs, you know, from larger artists, but not the ones that may be their most popular song. And we were just kind of screwing around with stuff like that. And when the pandemic hit, it was basically like at the same exact time, I remember it was like a week or two before that, we were like, wow, we really should just like make this an actual band. Like we should be a band. Like, and not just be screwing around playing pop punk covers in Colin's basement. Like we have something here. So then when the pandemic hit, we were kind of like a little bit in kind of full steam. We wanted to get going with it. And it definitely put a huge pause on everything. And that's when we kind of said, all right, we know we're not gonna be able to play shows. That's very apparent. How do we utilize, like, as a brand new band going into COVID with no bass, no nothing, no music on Spotify, no music on anywhere, like no social media presence. It was like, what do we do? Like, how do we actually do this? Like, because all we knew as musicians, especially like somebody like me, the last band I played in when I was 23. So it was like 10 years ago, 10 years in between me playing in a band. And all I knew was going to show, playing shows and hustling my music and hustling my merch and just getting in front of people. Well, we couldn't do that. So we were kind of like, what the hell do we do here? It was awesome because we just like, we connected with so many people. And I'll give a shout out to, you know, like goalkeeper, you know, Mark, especially, and Justin from Cheer Up Dusty. I just like literally reached out to those two just like online, and they were just so like helpful and instrumental in us like kind of figuring out how to get ourselves involved in the community. And, you know, kind of like find a good spot and like figure and leveraging that community to really figure out what we were going to do and how we were going to promote our music without being able to just go play shows. So, you know, without like, I kind of always say that when people ask about the history, because I think a lot of the reason why Promise Game is as successful as we are is because we've really leveraged the scene, the community, and everybody really coming together. And a lot of bands that don't do that, they're missing out. And I always like to just like, make sure you're talking with bands, like, you know, everything, like, you know, a lot of people always ask us, like, oh, how did you play? How'd you go on tour? Like after playing only like three shows with Driveways. And it's like, because I went to a Driveway show and I walked up to their booth and I introduced myself and I started talking to them. And next thing I knew, we were booking a tour. Like, so that's like, you know, that's really kind of like the history of Promise Game. And it's not just me doing it. Like my band is like, just every time we have the opportunity to make new friends and, you know, help other bands out, that's part of kind of who we are. And I think that's really helped us get to where we are today. You know, with kind of from like a historical perspective, not playing a ton of shows. I think we still have under 20 shows. You know, that's obviously from the pandemic, but you know, a lot of those shows and a lot of the things that we've done have really come from just being a part of the community. So, you know, from a historical, like I said, from a historical perspective, Promise Game is not just like us. Like, I honestly think like we've worked so well together with so many bands that have just given us great opportunities to this point. So.
Hell yeah. So you mentioned your community and your community's New Hampshire and like New England.
Yeah.
And, you know, just by kind of being an outsider looking in and like kind of when a tour poster comes out, like I always check to see like what venues and stuff people are playing at. New Hampshire's not always on there.
Never.
And not really often.
Never.
Like, other than like Keep Flying, because literally Keep Flying.
I booked those Keep Flying shows. Those yeah, are me. Yeah. I booked those at Jewel. So yeah, I, you know, that's a great point, because a lot of people don't really realize that we don't have a, I'll be straight up honest. We do not have a scene in New Hampshire. There is a metal scene. You know, I think so a lot of the work that I used to work, I still do a little bit of work with New Hampshire booking, you know, not as much as I used to. I've got other stuff that I've been working on in the music world. But, you know, they do a great job at bringing awesome big name acts into kind of like one venue. And that one venue is, you know, something that it's like, it's not the House of Blues. It's not, you know, a thousand room cap. It's, you know, like it's a 400 room cap. It is a great room. Everybody that plays it loves it. But we don't have that spot for like the Wonder Years to come to. Like I just saw a poster posted today. The Wonder Years is playing at the State Theater in Maine. So a lot of people, like Maine has places to play. They have the State Theater. They've got, actually they have like three places that you could go, you could get some good sized band in there. New Hampshire, we don't have any. We have one that's like in the middle of nowhere that you can bring in like kind of that size, like a, you know, like a one. I'm just like saying the Wonders because I saw that today. But like, you know, we just don't have those rooms. We have big type stuff like Meadowbrook, which is like an outdoor arena with like, you know, the half shell and the lawn and everything like that. Yeah. But that's not, you know, I mean, I saw Falling in Reverse there. Like, so like, that's like, that kind of gives you the kind of idea, like, Hollywood Undead, Falling in Reverse. So like, we don't just have like that nice kind of mid-cap place where we can bring in bands. Like Silverstein's never going to come to New Hampshire. Like there's nowhere for them to play. So that kind of is why we have to, we couldn't just leverage our local community. Like we don't live in New Jersey. We don't live in Texas. We don't live in California. And it, people in bands kind of know that those are hotspots, right? You know, there's a ton of bands, there's a ton of activity, and there's just great scenes. We don't have that. We have to really kind of try to, and that's why, you know, we're kind of thinking what we're doing for going forward from playing shows is we really want to start focusing, maybe not so much on going down to Baltimore and going out to, you know, way out in New York somewhere on the western side of New York. We need to really focus on Massachusetts, Maine, Vermont, Connecticut, Rhode Island, like the New England area more, because New Hampshire, we don't have that kind of like go home and we can play, you know, three shows in 1 month in our state. We could probably play a show every month and a half to 2 months in our state. And that would, and even then I'd be a little worried about, you know, the draw being the same, you know, for what we do in our state. Cause we do draw well, but it's like, you know, there's just, it's different out here. No, it's not like people just go to shows just to go to shows. It's much different. So we're trying to get much more involved in Boston, in Worcester, in the Massachusetts world. Like I said, you know, from a network perspective, that's where a lot of the bands we play from, we play with are from, because there's not, honestly, there's, I can count the number of true pop punk bands in New Hampshire on one hand, like it's unbelievable, to be honest with you. It's really actually hard to book shows sometimes too. Cause you always have to, I mean, literally we always have Massachusetts bands and Maine and Connecticut, because, you know, there just aren't a ton of bands in our genre out here. I would say even just in the alternative world, it's definitely more metal driven out in New Hampshire. So we just have to continue to work on expanding into like those other areas and just getting our foothold a little bit bigger. But we've played in all those spots. It's just more like we definitely have to kind of put more effort into making that part of our kind of draw in our scene.
So you're saying though, New Hampshire has either like super like large venues or like really small, like DIY.
Yeah. Spots? So to give you an example, so we have Meadowbrook, which is like a big one. Like that's where you get like, you know, John Mayer's played there a bunch. Right. So, then you have the Civic Center, which is in downtown Manchester, which is our largest city in New Hampshire. That's just the big stuff. That's, you know, I think that's a 30,000 person arena. So you get big stuff there. And then there's another spot out in Laconia, which is in the Lakes region, which is, you know, one of the probably the nicest places to be in this state, other than the ocean. But they have a place out there. And you see some big names like Black Flag played there this summer. That room is more like the Palladium, like a smaller House of Blues. It's not as big, but it does kind of get close to that, and it does get larger bands to play there. But I've never been to a show there. I'll tell you that right now. It is definitely more rock and metal, like. You know, bands that have kind of been, they're on their like third, fourth leg of the career type stuff. So that's kind of like really the only one that I would even consider like a place, like from a size perspective, like a band like a Newfound Glory could come play. They would be like close to that. They might be too big still, but that's the only thing close. And then everything else, like the next one down is Jewel Music Venue, where I've booked a lot of shows, and Promise Game has played a good amount of shows there as well. And we've had great shows there. And it's a good venue. It's a great venue. We had an awesome, like really, really big show, Calling All Captains, Driveways, Goalkeeper. It was when Goalkeeper and Calling All Captains went on tour together this summer. We played that show, and then we had our homies Weedaman Parachutes play that show too, and it was just insane. But that's only a 400 cap room, and it's really, in my opinion, it's like 350. So that's the draw. And then after that, it's bars with stages. It's really all it is. There's really not a lot. We have this really cool place called the Tupelo Music Hall, but it's all seated. They get some amazing artists. Like I saw Mark Cohn there. He was I don't know if you're familiar with Mark Cohn. He's a 80s, 90s kind of guy, Americana type stuff. Walking in Memphis. Walking in Memphis. So I saw him there. But like that's it. And if they took all the seats out of that place, that would be the venue. Right. That would be the type of venue that you're kind of used to seeing like our type of music at, but it's all seated. There's a couple other theaters that are just really nice in our town, like our major cities that are just seated venues, and you just can't have our type of music at that place. Like you just can't.
Dude, let's bring back seated venues. I'm all for that. And like,
right. And just
I would go to way more shows if I was seated and I could just like chill out and listen to good music.
I agree, because I think at our age, like we both said, we're 35. I don't really like, I kind of like dance like once or twice. Half the time I'm just like, you know, just kind of doing this. Like I'm dancing stuff, but like, I don't need to be like, I don't go into mosh pits. I don't go into the crowds. I don't do any of that anymore because I have an ACL and I'm an ACL surgery and I'm never doing that again. So it's like, I'm with you. I wish we could sell seated shows. I really do.
Yeah. I would go to so many shows that way. Like the last Warped Tour, and I haven't told this story in a long time, but the last Warped Tour came to Charlotte and played like the outdoor amphitheater, but the main stage was under the pavilion that had like an overhang and ceiling fans and seats. And nice. I like went there for like the first band. I forget who even was the first band. and I like sat down, and then like before I knew it, I was just like, oh my God, I've been here for like 6 hours and haven't moved. And then the rest of the day went by and I was like, yep, I'm not leaving. Like I literally sat in the same seat for the entire Warped Tour. And like, there was a ton of bands that were playing on the outskirts that I wanted to see.
But you were like, nah,
I was like, nah, it's like way too hot. I'm not doing that. I've done
Warped Tours. You were in the shade.
Yeah. There was a ceiling fan. It was beautiful. There was a nice breeze. And at one point it started to rain and like,
yeah, and you were good.
All good. So
I went to a Warped Tour, same thing, same exact setup, probably like the same exact type. They're all the same. Like they got the pavilion and then the yard or something up top. Right. Yeah. I did the same thing. And we did it for another festival too. And I did the same exact thing with my brother. I'll never forget. We were like, nah, it's too hot. We're in North Carolina. He lived in Charlotte. It was in Charlotte. And it was like 100 degrees out of the sun with like crazy humidity. And we were just like, we're not moving. We're staying in the shade. And the only shade was under that pavilion you're talking about. So we just didn't move. We missed a bunch of bands we wanted to see, but it was like, nope, I'm not doing it.
Yep. Same situation. Cool. So I do want to talk about, you know, how you have been, you know, helping bands book tours and stuff. And recently you started your own management company with Don't Blink, right? So like,
yeah.
Tell us about that because that's super cool. And
yeah, Don't Blink was like, interested in. yeah, I appreciate it. Yeah, no, Don't Blink definitely spawned off, everything kind of spawned off a Promise Game. Everything I'm doing from a music perspective, I like just have to like thank my buddies in Promise Game so much. Because if we didn't start this band, I would have never really dove into kind of something that's been a passion of mine for a long time. And I was just talking to my wife about this the other day when we were in college. I've been with her for 16 years now. And she was like, she reminded me, she's like, do you remember that thing, Lucky Street Records, you wanted to start when you were back in college? And it was like the MySpace days, dude.
Like based on the Cartel song?
Cartel. There you go. Yep.
Hold on. I got to let my dog in.
Oh, yeah. You're good. But she was like, do you remember that? I'm like, yeah. And she's like, look at the kind of full circle here. I'm like, I know, it's crazy. It's like 20 years later. But it all kind of started with the plan of how I kind of saw a way to help promote Promise Game really in the beginning. And I noticed that the more you can connect with bands and network with bands was going to be the best way to get our music out there and get other people to share it with their audiences and things like that. So I started just a Spotify playlist called Defend and Support the Scene. And this was back in like 2001 when we basically started releasing music. It was more or less just a tactic, a way where I was like, all right, this would be a great way to kind of just build some sort of way for our music to be in a collection with other people, right? And maybe get some ears on it. And then the next thing I knew, it started like really growing, doing well. I quickly like it one of the places we, and again, I have to give a lot of, you know, credit to where I am right now in the music world, to Squatch in the Pit. I don't know if you're familiar with those guys. They are a media broadcasting company and now they own a record store in Elmira, New York. But they were basically one of the first outlets that like played us on their radio station. And next thing I knew, I was doing a radio show because of my, you know, they came to me and said, we love what you're doing with this Defend and Support the Scene playlist. You know, I was getting bands involved and we were getting a lot of exposure on the playlist. And they were like, would you want to bring that onto our radio network and do a show every week, just, you know, playing songs from your playlist? So I've actually been doing that for like 2.5 years. We just moved over to the Asylum Radio Network, which has been awesome, being on that network. But I'm still working with those guys doing that. And it's still called, it's now rebranded because we got rid of the kind of Defend and Support the scene thing I was doing. And we're really kind of just doing the same thing with the radio show and the playlist. You know, that kind of spawned into now what I'm doing with Don't Blink. Because it was, you know, again, Don't Blink was, even when I say spawned by Promise Game, it's something that I decided I wanted to do based on the experiences that Promise Game went through over the last 2 years. You know, good and bad. You know, and it kind of was just like one of those things where I saw a need in the industry, in our world, working with, you know, mid-sized bands that are really trying to take that next step. To work with somebody that kind of has been in the trenches, especially, and not something that I've been doing for, you know, 20 years, obviously, but, you know, very quickly from a business perspective, learned that there are a lot of gaps in how things are done. And I saw that from a booking and management perspective, you know, a lot of bands and kind of what we've been trying to do. And with a lot of the opportunities we've been given, I didn't see a lot of connection in trying to run a band like a business when you're working with some of these people that, you know, were offering us their services. And I'm not saying that's across the board. We've never signed with a management company or any sort of label or anything like that. But we've had some really great opportunities to do so with some awesome folks. And we've just decided to stay kind of DIY. But it's kind of the idea of like where I saw, like, you know, a lot of bands might have a lot of things they do really well, but there might be areas that they just don't do well in, and it could be holding them back in a lot of different ways. So I just kind of like one day I was in South Carolina. I was in Hilton Head, and I did a flyer for a band, I was just doing flyers for bands. They kind of saw me doing all the stuff, and I would charge them like 10, 15 bucks for a flyer or something like that. I still call it the homie rate. So like, you know, bands that I'm friends with, I'll just do most of the time I'll just do it for free. but like, I was just sitting there and I did this flyer and I was just like, why, like this could like this, even just like this one little flyer, like it's just a gap. And I kind of started thinking about it more. And I was just like, there's so many gaps. There's so many things that bands do well, but there's obviously things that they don't do well. I started talking to Tyler Johnson from, you know, I had done work with him with Scene Daddy. You know, he's the president of Scene Daddy, and you know, he's just a really, really, really strong publicist. And that was one of the things that I thought was something that would be important to kind of building around too. So when I started talking with him and we kind of put this all together, it really just meshed really well. And we've been fortunate enough to have a lot of, you know, quick growth right off the bat, working with bands that, again, I know through Promise Game. You know, this really kind of all ties back, like without Promise Game, without what we've done in the last 3 years, I wouldn't be helping bands from a management and booking perspective and things like that. So it's been really awesome. We have some great bands that we're working with right now, all across the country. And it's really, again, we're, you know, it's a business, and we're, you know, doing what we're doing, but it's also just another extension, I think, of the networking and the connection aspect of just making sure that, you know, success really does kind of come from everybody working together. And that's what Don't Blink is built off of. You know, kind of, you know, when we call it a music group, that was something that I didn't just put music group after it. I really want it to be a group. It's something that we all work together. And it's been awesome because we've had some success already with bands working together, putting things together, using connections and helping each other out. It's been awesome. It's been really good.
And one of the bands that you guys have, I guess, on your roster is Driveways. And I know you mentioned how you guys have like formed that relationship, but like, yeah, you know, Driveways is kind of like one of those mystery bands. Like,
yeah, yeah, they are.
Especially someone that's not from New England. Like,
yeah, I'll tell you, like, though, they drop everywhere, the though. It's crazy.
I know. Like, I'm salivating at the day when they play close to me. Like,
I know,
but I don't even know if that's ever going to happen.
No, it's going to happen. So yeah, like, it'll happen at some point. I'm sure it'll happen at some point. No, yeah, we work with them. I work with them on a booking perspective. I really just help them out. You know, I don't even do all their booking. Like they're, you know, everything I do is really gap filling. So, you know, where a band like Driveways needs help, I basically just step in and do that. Right. Tyler doesn't really do the booking stuff for Don't Blink yet. He's really focused on the publicity and some of the management stuff too. But, you know, it really was like just that kind of relationship forming thing. Like when I started this, I reached out and I just said, you know, is there anywhere, you know, we've worked with each other a bunch, and the first tour that we went on, I did a lot of the logistics behind it. And I think that was just really a good way to build relationship with all the bands that we went on that tour with. You know, since then we've been, you know, playing shows with all those guys. So that kind of, yeah, that relationship formed through Promise Game and things like that. And when we started up the business, you know, I reached out and we're working to try to get them more exposure out there. You know, like, as you said, they're a mystery band, right? It's insane. Like, everywhere they go, they just pack a room. It's unbelievable. They're just like, they're so good. But, and that's where I'm just kind of really just helping them out, trying to, you know, expand their reach a little bit. Everyone knows now tonight they're playing down in Pittsburgh. They played in Baltimore last night and they're on a run with Alistair. So like a little weekender with Alistair. So they're definitely, I think you're going to see them, you know, playing more stuff, you know. And yeah, it's weird though. Everyone kind of always like asks me like, Driveways is like one of the best bands ever, but they don't like play a lot of shows, do they? And I'm like, I don't know what to tell you. You're gonna start seeing a shift, because I think one thing we've all realized, right? They're just an amazing band. I think they're starting to see that, like, they, you know, you go on one of their Instagram posts and it's like, where should we play? And there's like 300 comments, and they're not like, they're all different. They're all throughout the country. So they see that, right? And they're like, all right, we gotta like start more. So I can't like share anything. I don't really know what to tell you, but I know that they're definitely trying to play, you know, they're trying to get out there more. I know for a fact. And you know, they're, I don't know if you've never seen them, it is a spectacle, just to see even how people like react to their music, I think is one of the coolest things. You know, the music is amazing, but then you see people like getting into it like the way they are. And you know, I always like, my wife always laughs too. Like, they're so New England, they're so Boston. Like, you can hear it in, like, you can just, it oozes out through them. And it's just, it's amazing. And, you know, they really do have a stronghold, I think, on the scene right now. And I think a lot more people are starting to, you know, get introduced to them, which is huge.
Yeah. I feel like they'd be perfect to just go on like the festival circuit and just like, Because they're, you know, I know that they're teachers. They've been on the show before and yep. shared that. So, like, how perfect would it be for them to just, like, play a few festivals yep. over the summer? Like, well, they wouldn't have to worry about taking off work and things like that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I think you're going to see them definitely starting to do that more type of stuff down the road. And I know just from a perspective, like, even playing with them, like, you know that they could easily just go across the country and do a festival run easy. And it would blow them up too. That's the thing. Like, I still think there's a lot of people in the industry that are unfamiliar with Driveways. That when they like, if and when they hear them, they're gonna be like, what the hell? But then you look at all their statistics too. And again, I'm not a huge statistics guy, but when you look at statistics like theirs, it's like, holy crap. You know, compare them to some of the bands, even on Pure Noise, on any of the majors. Like, and when I say majors, I say our majors, right?
Yeah.
They have statistics bigger than a lot of those bands, actually. And you know, the music speaks for itself, and their live performance speaks for itself too. That's the thing. I think anybody that's ever seen Driveways, they're just like, oh my god, that band! I'm definitely seeing them again.
But it's also kind of like the mystery, which gets people really yeah. hooked too. Like, I feel like you got to kind of walk that fine line, because if all of a sudden they start playing like 200 shows a year,
yeah,
maybe that goes away. Like,
yeah, I get it too. I think, you know, they definitely have something that works really well. I know one thing's for sure about that band is they love what they do. They love what they're doing. They love playing music for people. Like everybody though, like, we all have lives and stuff, you know? So, you know, that's definitely something. And you mentioned their teachers, like, yeah, they are teachers, and you know, they take their careers pretty, you know, they take pride in that. So it's like, you know, finding that balance. But at the same time too, looking at their statistics, it's one of those things where it's like, man, wish you guys would just like go tour the country forever. Just quit your jobs and go tour. It'd be awesome. But I think you're right though. I think that exclusivity factor plays a major part in kind of their brand. Because, you know, I'll tell you right now, when they play a sold out show in Boston, it is insane. It's insane. It's absolutely insane. It was like one of the coolest nights I've ever had music wise.
I would imagine
sharing that stage with them. Yeah, it was amazing.
Hell yeah. So, Colin, I do want to dive into some hockey talk, but
yeah,
before we do that, I do have to tell everyone about our homies DraftKings. So hockey fans, light the lamp this winter with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL. New customers can bet just $5 pregame money line on any NHL team to win their game and get $100 in free bets if they do. If that wasn't enough excitement, you can turn small bets into bigger payouts with same game parlays. Combine multiple bets like which team will win, how many goals will be scored, and more for your shot at an even bigger payout. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code THPN. Bet $5 on any NHL team to win their game and get $150 in free bets if they do. Only at DraftKings Sportsbook with promo code THPN. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See show notes for details. So, Colin, you mentioned before we started recording that you're mostly a diehard Bruins fan, but yeah, then also a little bit of Sabres, and I see the Pat LaFontaine jersey in the background. So yeah, I definitely want to jump in.
And the stick up there is from the 93 team too. So that's Pekka's up there and all those guys. And
yeah, so I definitely want to talk about the Bruins side, but why the Sabres? That's a little for someone from New Hampshire.
See, well, so that's the thing. So I am I was born in New Hampshire, but then when I was 1 year old, my parents moved. My dad got, and that's why actually it's funny, the clock right there, that's an 8 o'clock coffee clock, and it says 4 o'clock. It always reads 4 o'clock because that's my nickname from New Hampshire. My dad's 8 o'clock, and I'm 4 o'clock at the bar that we used to always he'd bring me to. That's where my love of hockey came from. And my dad, when he worked at 8 o'clock coffee, sponsored the Buffalo Sabres. We're from, and I was in Syracuse, New York. So we were, you know, 2 hours away or an hour and a half away from Buffalo. So my parents are New England through and through. So I was raised a Bruins fan, a Patriots fan, a Red Sox fan. When the Sabres were going to Stanley Cups, the Bills were going to the Super Bowl 4 times in 5 years, and the Red Sox were just terrible. And it was obviously, you know, Yankees and all that. So like, I was like a sports fan in like upstate New York. And I had to just like, my parents, like my dad especially, was like, you can like the Sabres, but you're a Bruins fan. Like, just don't forget that you're a Bruins fan. And so it was cool. Like, I grew up going to Sabres games all the time because my dad was sponsoring the team with his company. Like, I remember times going, like our whole team, like our whole Pee Wee hockey team went to a game one time. We all drove and it was really fun. Like, we'd go out on trips and we'd bring some of the kids to games and things like that. So I was like always going to Sabres games. Like, I would say going to like 5 or 6 a year as a kid. So that's kind of where my love of, you know, the Sabres came up. My brother's a goalie. He's obsessed with Dominik Hasek. I'm a center, you know, Pekka and LaFontaine are my guys. Like, I love, you know, I've always loved the Sabres, but it's kind of weird. I tell people that, and they're like, but you're a Bruins fan. How can you like both of those teams? And I'm like, you know what? It's not that big of a deal. Like, they're never going to play each other in the conference finals. So it's not going to matter.
So, when did you move back to New Hampshire from Syracuse?
On my 9th birthday, right, and literally coming out of the locker. This is real life. Leaving the locker room from just winning like some tournament that we were in Alexandria. Literally hanging out with my friends, get out of the hockey locker room, in the car, driving to New Hampshire as a 9 year old on my birthday.
That didn't like scar you or anything.
I'll never forget that, right? I'll never forget that. I always tell my dad, I'm like, you couldn't have waited one day. But yeah, so yeah, that was when we moved back. And then that's actually, it was funny because like when I came back, hockey was definitely a little more at my age. For some reason, it just felt way more competitive out in New York. So when I came out here, it was awesome. Like I felt like I had a little bit of leg up on everybody and it was great, but then I never grew. So, you know, I was that 5'3" in high school guy as a center, just, you know, using my smarts to be a starter.
So when you lived in Syracuse, did you go to Syracuse Crunch games all the time?
Oh yeah. So that was, I think I still have a puck. I think I still have a Syracuse.
Was it like the crunch, somewhere. Like the crunch man?
Yeah,
like
the dude coming like out. Super, the dude, yeah. With the when I was there, they still had the orange. So it was like the purple and orange trim too, like on the bottom of their jersey. So that was like in the puck too. But yeah, the crunch. So I would say I probably went to, you know, like probably a handful of crunch games. Those were fun. Trying to remember, I was super young too, so I was probably, you know, like I said, 8, 9 or something like that. But try to remember what team that who their affiliate was. Was it I thought it was Toronto, but it's not.
See, when I, because I went to SUNY Cortland, which is basically right there.
Oh, you did? Oh, yes. Okay. Yeah.
So I actually went to a bunch of Crunch games, and they were affiliated with the Columbus Blue Jackets at the time.
That's probably who they are right now, too. That makes probably sense.
Yeah. And
I'm trying to remember who they were when it, because I was, that's, this was like back in the 90s. Maybe they, and Columbus wasn't even a team back then.
But I'll never forget, man. There was this guy, Nasty Morasty, who was on the team, and he was actually just on Spittin' Chiclets. Like,
oh, okay.
Or no, he was just on Terry Ryan's podcast. That's what it was. And he was a beast, man. Like, he was unbelievable. He would literally get haymakers thrown at him and smile as he was just getting.
What position? Was he a defenseman?
No. He was like a 5'5" forward.
Oh, I love, and he can take a punch. I love those guys. Like, damn, that's like Cicerelli, all those dudes. Oh God, I love that.
Yeah. But he was sharing this story about how he was playing in the cage, and he was actually on that. You know how Netflix just did that documentary about the Danbury Thrashers?
Yeah,
he was on one of those teams.
Oh, he was.
Yeah, Nasty Morasty, and he was on the Syracuse Crunch. But when I was there, the Crunch actually went on a deep playoff run, and like. Derek Dorsett, McKenzie, Zenon Konopka. Like, they had a really
stacked. They had some guys. Yeah,
Tom Sestito.
Oh, geez, he was on that team too?
Yeah, dude, it was
God.
It was like goons, but also who could play hockey.
Yeah,
like,
who could play, yeah.
Zenon Konopka, he you know, ended up going and playing for Tampa and the Islanders and a bunch of Sabres too, I think he was on
for a while. Yeah, he did play for Sabres, yep.
And he was like a stud, but he also would throw down with anyone.
I love that.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun watching those games.
My AHL stuff is more like, so like when we growing up, like the Manchester Monarchs, they were like huge for our city. And I grew up in Bedford, which is, I went to Manchester West. So I literally went to Manchester High School. They were huge. And I remember just seeing some of the, like we had so many drop downs and so many guys actually coming up too, right? Like, so I watched Jonathan Quick for 3 seasons before he became Jonathan Quick. That's my favorite.
And he's kind of a local boy, right? He's from Hamden, Connecticut, which is
Connecticut. Yep.
Kind of the same thing.
Yeah, there's guys like, there's just, it's so cool. I loved the AHL for that reason. It was like, and I, you know, I was younger, so like, and I, but I was like 16, so I was still going to games, but I could go buy a ticket for like $20 and go watch just amazing hockey and like really like guys that are either coming down and rehabbing or on their way up. And that for me, like I used to love going to AHL games. I would like go to more AHL games than I would go to Bruins games. Not even, and obviously because it's right down the street, but I don't know. AHL had like a special place in my heart with the Monarchs for a long time. I went to a lot of Monarchs games.
So what's the deal? Are they not a team
They're
anymore?
They're gone. It's an ECHL team now. Yeah. So, you know, the team, it was basically when Los Angeles, so they were the affiliate for the Kings.
Yep.
And I think there's a lot of different stories on why they left. I think it was 2 things. I think the city lost interest because I remember going to a game where they were playing the Hamilton Bulldogs, right?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they, it was a Calder Cup playoff game. I think it was, and they were, I think they were like the 2 seed and we were the 4 or the 5 or something like that. So it was a good game. There was nobody there. We showed up, we bought tickets for $15. We sat on the glass, like, cause there was literally nobody there. And it was like, I remember I was with my brother and my wife and I was just like, this is sad. I remember being in here for games that didn't even matter and you couldn't even move. So I think that was a big part of it. But I also think it was mainly because of the Kings basically saying like, we can't, like, think of New Hampshire and think of where LA is. You got to bring a guy up tonight or tomorrow. Like a guy goes down, you got to get a guy here in San Jose for the next day. You got to fly him across country.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that was a major part of it, to be honest with you. I think like you heard rumblings of the executives not loving how far away it was from each other for scouting purposes, for all this type of stuff, right? So I think that played a major part in it. And then now, yeah, like you literally go there. That's one of the arenas that I was telling you about that has like bigger shows. That's the, I think it's called the Southern New Hampshire Center now, but it used to be, you know, it's been through like six or different names, but monarchs were the biggest thing there. And now that they're not there, it's just like, you know, monster trucks and concerts and, you know, like Elton John and stuff like that. But yeah, it kind of just died. It died over like the course of only like 3 years too. It was really fast. It didn't like fizzle. It was just like, monarchs are gone. and they stayed an ECHL team, and they still are, but they don't even play. I'm pretty sure they don't even play in that arena anymore. I think they play somewhere else.
Interesting. Yeah, I love the AHL. I'm not gonna lie. You know, I have a team right here in Charlotte. Try to get to as many games as possible throughout the season. But
yep.
Sir, I truly like hold a place in my heart for the War Memorial. Like, you know, Slapshots was filmed there, and it's just like such a barn, dude. It's no frills.
It's a real barn.
It's a real barn. And there's this like secret basement bar that I discovered when I was going to college there. Yeah. And it was like, okay. It was the hack. And dude, we would sneak in 24 packs. Like, because it's winter in Syracuse, so you have layers
on.
It's
winter all the time in Syracuse.
Yeah, so we would literally just pack our sleeves with as many beers as we could and just walk into
That's awesome. That's awesome. Yeah, I always tell people that's probably because you were in Syracuse, but like, you got to stay warm somehow out there. It's it either rains or snows. So
yep,
that's why I'm not kidding you. I was always in a bar when I was a kid. Like, that's where I got the 4 o'clock. Like,
whereabouts in Syracuse did your family live?
We lived in Clay. So it's Liverpool area. Okay. So that's like, what do you, it's Clay, Liverpool, North Syracuse, I think is what the run is there.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's kind of where we had our spot. But I played at the fair. That's my home rink was the fairgrounds.
I went to that outdoor game in Syracuse. Oh, at the fairgrounds.
That's awesome. Was it sweet? Did they do a good job? Well, did the ice hold up?
It started to like blizzard, so that made it kind of bad. Okay. It was definitely cold enough. Like it was freezing. Good. But
yeah, good. That's where they should do the outdoor games. Yeah. Oh, that's so cool, dude. Yeah. I'll tell you, I love, it's actually days. Like, I'm looking out my window. It's days like today that make me miss Syracuse and upstate New York. Cause it's a really awesome place, but it is always raining or snowing at all times. You don't see a lot of sun out there.
Nope.
No, you were there you were in Portland for 4 years. It's the same thing.
Some would say worse.
Worse, probably. Yeah. You don't get the lake effect, though, do you? You don't get the lake effect storms, do you?
No, we would. We would definitely get those.
You would?
And it was just one of those things where they were so used to the snow. So when we got blizzard and like literally feet of snow, they would never close school. So we would still have to like figure out a way to get to class through a blizzard. And sometimes they didn't shovel or plow yet.
Oh, that sucks. That's bull. Yeah,
it would be a mess.
I always tell people, so like New Hampshire, and it has changed because our climate has definitely changed. But we've always had good, you know, good winters. But I would always tell people, I'm like, you have no idea. Like, they'd complain about like snow or how cold it was. I'm like, go live in Syracuse for one winter. And you'll never complain about anything in New Hampshire ever again. Ever.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So then, you know, obviously, you know, being in New England, you have no choice. You got to be a Bruins fan too. So is that kind of how it went? You just, once you made it back, you jumped on the Bruins.
I was always a Bruins fan. I still was you also see Bobby over my shoulder too. I grew up a Bruins fan. My dad like had me watching Bruins all the time. We would watch, you know, old footage on like, you know, when they would show like the old stuff on ESPN of like Terry O'Reilly, and you know, even like when I was younger too, like, you know, Bork was around, and you know, I was a center, but I always loved watching Ray Bork play. So I definitely was a Bruins fan for sure. And then when I came back, it was like, it kind of felt like when I came back to New England, everything within a couple of years, like New England sports started getting good. So, you know, I would say I was one of the guys that, like, out of all my friends, I was definitely a bigger Bruins fan before all of them. I would say my friends, I have a good amount of bandwagon friends for sure when it comes to the Bruins. But yeah, my dad is a huge sports guy. And, you know, even growing up in, you know, when I say growing up, living there for 9 years, the first 9 years of my life, like that's very impressionable from a sports perspective if you're an athlete. But my dad raised me as a New England sports fan. So
do you have a favorite Bruin of all time?
Of all time, it's definitely Bobby Orr. Just watching him play hockey is magician-esque. Watching a dude that can just, especially back in those days where you could get hacked to shit, and you know, think of the equipment they were using. That's what I always think about, like especially the equipment, right? Think of what he was doing, like the way he was doing it. Like, there's a couple players in the world that have had that type of effect on the game. And there's some of them, obviously, like I think Ovechkin's one of those guys. I think Sidney's one of those guys. But like, he's just, and I know that's a super boring answer, and I'll give you my second one. My second one is Mark Recchi, which is okay. Weird. Cause a lot of people don't think of Mark Recchi as a great Bruin, but he was a great Bruin. He was a really good Bruin. So I would, there you go. You got the obvious answer, but then I'll give you Mark Recchi too. That's my other guy. And I'm a big Patrice guy, but I just love Patrice from his longevity perspective. And he's just one of the best. I'm a face-off artist too, so I pride myself in winning face-offs. He is just special when it comes to that.
And let's talk about the cup run, because that was kind of like the sweet spot. Like, I wish that I was, you know, right out of college when my team won a championship, because at that point you're starting to earn your own money.
I was living right out of college. It was awesome.
That's what I meant. So like, tell me about that run.
I will never forget. I went to the, it was my first parade. I'd never gone to a parade.
That's what I mean. Like, you have the option to do cool things like that.
Yeah. So I obviously the Patriots had won a bunch of, you know, before that, and the Sox had won, I think, you know, in the 2000s, and there was like two or three of them, right? Yeah. So I just never went to a parade, because I never really was like, I was cool, but I was like, that when they won, I was just like, I never woke up the next morning after a sports game and just smiled because of like what happened the night before. Like, I'm very good at like separating my emotions from sports, because I'm not on the team. I have nothing to do with it. I'm more just like, it's supposed to be entertainment. Obviously there's, you know, there's emotion tied to it, but I was on a high for a week. It's all I could talk about at work. It's all I talked about. It's all I talked about anywhere. And it was the parade was on a Friday. And I remember asking my boss if I could like get it off. And they basically said no. So I took an unpaid day. And I was right out of college. So that kind of stunk. I was like, oh, I don't care. I'm doing it. Me and my buddy went down. He's like one of those huge Bruins fans that I've been playing hockey with my whole life. We went down. It's one of the most amazing days, dude. And I met up with my parents. We partied all day. Just one of the best experiences ever. And I think that really culminated. Like, you could see everybody in Boston that day. Just like, it was pretty magical. Like, it was definitely something that city, that fan base, who's just been so diehard for so long, we needed that big time. Like, that was big. We needed that, because it had been a while. Since we were like relevant in the conversation about winning a Stanley Cup, like we've had good teams, but never like, you know, holy crap, for as long as I can remember.
And you realize, because you know you're older and you understand sports and things like that at that point in your life, just how tough it is to win the Stanley Cup. Like, compared to other sports, like football, you win like two or three games and you're in the Super Bowl. Like,
you're in the Super Bowl.
Hockey is a grind, dude. And I realized that with the Islanders, like, going to the Eastern Conference Final, like, myself as a fan, I was exhausted. I was tired. I was like, dude, if they win this game, we still have another series. Like, I was burned out.
Yeah, staying up, you're like, oh, I can't stay up for another game. And it's like, you're not even playing.
I know. And it just made me realize, like, man, can you imagine what these players are going through? And like, it makes sense why the Islanders didn't have such a great year last year, because like, they went to the Eastern Conference Finals two seasons in a row.
Yeah.
So like,
they call that the burnout effect, dude.
Yeah. Like, they were, you can burn yourself out.
Yep.
So I'm just like, I kind of experienced it, but we still came up a little short. And
Yeah.
I don't even know what it's going to be like when I finally get to experience that as a fan.
Because... it's going to be awesome. You got to go to the parade for sure. Make sure you go to the parade.
Yeah.
I'll tell you that. You're going to get one. I think that team, especially the way you guys are kind of, you know, set up right now. I think that team, you look at some of the teams out there who are kind of set up in the way that the game's moving to, or where it's at now, but also moving to, and Islanders are definitely there. I think, you know, that's kind of where you look at the Bruins and be like, what's going on? Like, they're playing like out of their skulls right now. But I'll tell you right now, in Boston, we've all seen this especially with this team, where they're winning at not the time you really need them to be winning. And I think our age, especially, you know, we're an old team. Like, that shows itself when you start talking March, I think, is like really when I see February, March, and that's like, you know, you have young legs, you have young guns, you have more of like kind of that speed game. I think you're much more poised for a run than you are when you're a team that's kind of, you know, definitely older, but also has kind of like that older style of play. Like, we don't burn and turn anybody in the burn. Like, I don't think I can't remember the last time we had a burn and turn player other. And like, Pasta's not that guy. Pasta's more of like a playmaker and more of a shot, you know, more of a shooter, if you ask me. So I don't know.
Well, now that I think about it, like, I don't even think the Islanders and the Bruins have played each other yet this year. And if they did, I don't even remember that game.
Actually, you might be right.
Yeah.
I don't watch every single game. Hold on.
These are things that like we could have researched before, but we don't do that.
We don't do that. Come on. We keep it cash. We keep it cash.
But I really don't think they have. I feel like I would have remembered at least like something.
Yeah, they haven't. They haven't. Their first game is December 13th.
That's crazy.
They only have one game against each other in 2022, December 13th.
Wow.
That's insane. Yeah, that is wild.
Well.
Huh. Interesting. Well, good luck to you on December 13th. I'll be thinking about you. You know what? I probably will watch that game now. I will definitely watch that game no matter what.
Yeah, we can just talk smack to each other.
I'll just talk. Yeah, we'll talk. Yeah, I'll just hit you up on IG and just be like, oh, you know what though? I will say this. I actually like doing that. I like talking to people when I watch sports, especially hockey. I always tell people it's funny. Like, hockey and lacrosse have been the two sports I've played my entire life. And they're the two sports that I watch the least on TV, which is really weird. But when
even,
I'm watching
even with like the new reformatted lacrosse league, like the PLL, yeah, like I've heard that it's pretty sweet though.
It is cool. I think it's more or less, well, I'll say this, availability is one thing for lacrosse. When I do watch more, like I watch college lacrosse and stuff like that. But even speaking so like to hockey, it's available to me every single night. I throw it on always in the background. Like, I'll be working on stuff and I'll listen and I'll watch. And then, you know, we might not watch the whole game, but it's on for, you know, a little bit pretty much. And I do that with the Red Sox too, for the most part. But I don't like just sit down. Like, our drummer, Mark, who wanted to be on today's show, he had to work. But he's like a fan that watches every single Bruins game. Like, he does not miss a Bruins game. So like, I'm like different than him. And, you know, he didn't play a bunch. Like, he played a little bit, but I'm just like, I don't know if I like what it is, why I don't love watching it. If I'm watching it with people, it's different. But if I'm just sitting around watching it myself, I always find myself like turning it off for some reason. So I don't know. A lot of people think that's weird as like a hockey player, that I'll like watch golf nonstop, but then I'll like flip off hockey.
I think sports fans kind of go through waves. Like, for a couple of years, I was a huge Met fan and like watched almost every single game. And then, like, I think I got burnt out.
Yeah, you get burnt out. Yeah.
And then
I
got burnt like,
out by the Sox.
Yeah. And then I was just like, you know what? Hockey was always my first love. And it really.
So do you watch pretty much like every Islanders game?
Well, now I'm a father of a 2-year-old.
Yeah. Congratulations, by the way.
That kind of throws a wrench in things that I want to do.
Right.
I try to. I try to watch every Islander game.
Yeah.
And it is like sometimes like what I look forward to on a crappy work day. I'm like, you know what? Just gonna get through this day and I get to watch the Islanders. And it's kind of just a time where I just let everything go and I'm just like in the moment watching a hockey game for a couple hours.
Yeah, I would say actually I do that too with the I do that with the Bruins out of probably any team that I follow. Like if I'm like you literally what you just said, like if I had a bad day or if like just something like if I'm like I really just want to like watch a sporting event and just like not look at my phone, it's gonna be the like because the Patriots that's Sunday and that's like a whole day we do football and all that type of stuff. But like on a random Tuesday. You know, I do actually find myself being like, you know what? I'm just gonna watch the Bruins, and I'm not gonna look at my phone. I'm just gonna, you know, I'll throw down a bet, but I'm not gonna look at my phone. I'll look at it later. That's the other thing. I do the in-game betting now with like with hockey. Oh God, don't ever do that. It's just like
I
it's a
guess I gotta say,
crapshoot.
use promo code THPN, right? I feel like the Hockey Podcast
Where
Network would be mad. Yeah.
is
Yeah, they'd be mad at me if I didn't say that.
it? Yeah, there you go. But yeah, actually, it's funny. I'll tell you a little side story about DraftKings. I used to work with the founder and CEO. He was my camp counselor, and then I actually was his at a day camp. And then he was like a counselor when I was like a CIT, like a training counselor. Little
So he's a
tidbit.
New Hampshire guy?
He's from Merrimack, New Hampshire.
Interesting. Very cool.
So, but yeah. So yeah, like when it comes to hockey, I think one of the like everything for me, it's like I would rather. Like if I'm watching it with somebody, I will watch an entire day of hockey. But I think it's, you know, that's kind of how I always had been about hockey. Like for me as a hockey player, like I have so many things in my life because of hockey, like everything from like personality traits to like some of my best friends to this day. Hockey's always been like more of like a cultural thing for me than just a sport. Like, 'cause it's been so, it's a huge part of my life. I've been playing since I was four and, you know, all my dad's really good friends are all hockey dads. You know what I mean? And same thing, like it's just it is what it is. And but that's hockey. When you play your when you play, it becomes a big part of your life because there's so much that goes into it, especially when you're a youth. It's pretty crazy.
Oh yeah. Shout out to all the hockey moms and
All the
dads,
hockey
'cause
moms and dads, like you guys are the realest. The
yeah.
realest. Actually, so much that I tell my we don't have kids. I've been married for 10 years. If we have a boy or girl, it doesn't matter. If we ever do, I would probably maybe not want them to play hockey for a couple different reasons.
Yeah, same.
Yeah. I mean, I reffed my whole life too, so I stopped reffing when I was 20, right when I finished college. I was the last game, pretty much game I reffed. So I've seen hockey from every perspective. And I'm good. I don't need my kids playing hockey.
No,
I'm good.
it's those early morning or late night practices and things like that, and it's super expensive too. Yeah.
The most expensive, it has to be the most. I don't know for a fact, but it has to be the most expensive view sport because I always say, like, people go, like, well, why? And I go, what do kids do every year? They grow. Skates cost $400. God forbid they're a goalie. Like, my brother had new pads every year because if you have that little inch, you're gonna get hurt.
Yeah.
It's gotta fit. You know, same thing with like anything. It's crazy. Like, and then the ice time and you know, the leagues that you
Let's be
get
real. Like,
paid. Ugh.
it's even expensive to play men's league hockey. And
Oh yeah,
like you're an adult with a
500
job.
bucks for 10 games. It's like, what the hell? But I can
Yeah.
tell you why. I know why though. Like as a referee, I made a lot of money refereeing hockey. I will tell you that right now. I made a ton of money refereeing hockey. So the refs get paid good, and the ice is expensive for sure.
Yeah.
I know that. I know that. I think even men's league refs get paid pretty good. I never did men's league. I did do some like you know like. The highest I ever did was women's. I did a women's college game a couple times. I never did men's league because I never wanted to subject myself to that. Like that, why would you want to be a babysitter basically for an hour
Yeah.
with a bunch of grown men? And especially like the games where you get guys that think it's the Stanley Cup and it's like, oh my God, get me the hell out of here. Like I have skated off before. Like I'm good. I'm done with this game.
Yeah. Yep. Touche. Well, Colin, man, it was a blast hanging and chatting Promise Game and chatting Bruins and
Yeah,
Sabres
dude, it
and
was a blast.
Don't Blink and all those great things. So, I do want to leave everyone with your latest single, Connecticut. So make sure you head over to Spotify, Apple Music, head over to
Anywhere.
the link in the bio. I'm sure they got one.
Oh yeah,
And
check the
yep, check the bio and
bio.
add the song to your playlist if you have one. Share it with your friends, and
Absolutely.
we'll stay in touch, Colin. It was a
Yeah,
blast,
thanks
man.
so much, Mikey. Really appreciate it, man. It was awesome talking to you.
All right.
See you. Have a good one, man. Go, go Islanders. I'm a man of everything. Go Islanders, go Bruins, go Sabres.
Thanks, dude.
Later, guys. See ya.